Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, another start to a Flames season, another loss to start a Flames season. The Flames now have 10 years in a row where they've lost their season opener. And I'm Dan alongside Matt here to talk about that and the home opener as well. Matt, overall, thoughts on this week?
Well, I thought the Flames as a team played rather well, and I think that they have to tighten up a bunch of different areas, like especially with taking way too many dumb penalties, which that's what cost us the Avalanche game, in my opinion.
Well, let's jump right into that Avalanche game then. Calgary opened the season on October 3rd in Colorado. The Flames scored 3 goals, which usually my old hockey coach, you say if you got 3 goals, you should probably win the game. The Avalanche said, we see your 3 and we'll raise you 2. It was a 5-3 loss for the Flames. Going into the first period of this one, I thought I was watching another playoff game. Like, this looked like the same Calgary team that was getting outworked, outplayed, wasn't playing well on their own against Colorado. I didn't think it was a great showing. I thought the Flames were quite sloppy in the first.
Yeah, they were downright terrible, and that's how they usually start every season. Like, the first period, 10 minutes of each period of each game for as far back as I can remember, it's usually like that, where it's like they don't know what end of the stick is up and how to play basic defense or anything. It's really bad until they settle down.
The good news, I guess, in this game, the Flames won 54% of their faceoff chances, but the thing that really tanked them, 29 minutes of penalties. And I think that's really the Flames, if you look, were unable to get going 5-on-5 in the first half of this game because they were always on the special teams, either PP or PK, and there were a lot of guys not being used. I think this team struggled to just get out of the gate because of that.
Yeah, and, this is one of those rare instances where I'm actually going to blame the loss on the referees for not catching that Landeskog knocked that puck down at center ice. Like, it's blatantly obvious that the guy knocked it down, and that ended up being the difference in the game.
There was also some really questionable penalties in this one.
Oh, for sure. But those, they tend to balance out over the course of a season. So, like, you might get the short end of the stick that night, and you might get the benefit of the doubt the next. And pretty much every team goes through that. And, but when there's really bad calls like that, and, like, I don't even understand why that's not reviewable just because it's in the neutral zone. Like, that to me seems silly, but you'd think that they'd be prioritizing getting the correct call correct instead of, oh, well, these situations allow us not to do that. And just seems lazy, but,
I can sort of, I don't disagree that we want to get the call correct, but I think at the same time they're thinking, well, if it's in the neutral zone, it shouldn't adversely affect one team over the other.
True, but, things happen and cost the Flames at least a point. So, on the whole, I thought that this game, Calgary responded better than they did during the playoffs, and they looked a lot better in the last, 25-30 minutes of the game. Basically, after Milan Lucic sucker punched the door off, that's when the team got going.
Yeah, I think the third period we started to see them playing Calgary Flames hockey. The first two, it just didn't seem like they were ready to go.
Yeah, and this team, whenever they're playing their game their way, they'll beat anybody. Mm-hmm. And we saw that a lot last year where they were just, like the Vancouver game this week where they just controlled the game and that's it and you can't do anything and we win. And it's when they get in their own heads of, oh, I can't. And we saw that in the playoffs last year where, oh, we're tentative because if we make a mistake, we'll screw up and everything will go wrong. And because of that hesitancy that everything went wrong and they lost.
Well, I don't even know if it's hesitancy. I think part of it too is, like you said, they weren't playing their game. They were trying to play Colorado's game in the playoffs, and I'd say even in the first game here, they were trying to play Colorado's game and let Colorado dictate the way they played and the pace of the game, and that's when the Flames get into trouble.
Yeah, and Calgary has to get a little bit more confidence that they're effing awesome go kick ass.
Yeah, but you don't want too much confidence either.
True, but you have to have a little bit of that swagger. Like, if you look at teams that tend to be, like, the perennial contenders, like LA previously, Chicago previously, Boston, like, there's just something about those teams where they just have that aura of, you know, you're going to have a real difficult time with this team. And Calgary, it's like, we're really good, but we're not really sure how good we actually are. And they need to get that inner confidence of, yeah, we're just that good.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from. I just think I want to see this team play more consistently first. And
True.
You know, I mean, there's still times they're getting off their game, and we'll talk about that with the Vancouver game, but you can't be confident until you can at least be and know who you are. I still feel like this team doesn't always know who they are. Anything else about the Colorado game you want to chat about?
Even though Rittich allowed 4 goals, like, really, there's not a goalie in the NHL that would have stopped any of them. So, you know, I thought it was a very good performance by him, and it could have been easily a laugher if it had not been for his play in the game.
Yeah, Rittich looked good in this one. I thought the first line was looking good, the Monahan line, I mean... Monty got a goal. Johnny got a goal. Lindholm.
Sam Bennett looked really good.
Yeah, Bennett did for sure. Gio does not look 36. This is his 36th birthday, and it looked like he just picked up where he left off last year.
Yeah, he's really 26, and you know he just had to lie on his birth certificate to play all those years in the NHL.
Maybe he bought a fake birth certificate that Yuri was playing in Russia.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt, something that I was noticing here as well from, I think, all the lines is the Flames were, I thought, more physical in this game than we saw in the playoffs. I mean, I still don't think they did enough, but we were seeing more finished checks. I would say we were seeing guys, say, digging in the corner a little bit. Obviously, the Lucic, as you called it, sucker punch. You know, it looks like this team has a little bit more sandpaper to it this year.
Yeah, and I like what Lucic did there. Like, you don't like seeing somebody clock a guy.
Explain the play for anyone that didn't see the game.
Well, Zadorov hit Zarnik rather hard and in a brutal way, and Zarnik got injured and I do believe did not return to the game. And Lucic just stepped in and, like, started shoving Zadorov, and Zadorov wouldn't go with him, so he just punched his head into the glass and then proceeded to drop the gloves with him. And, it's good to see that kind of response to a player getting hit in a vulnerable situation. For years, like, I remember years ago when players would get hurt, like Stempniak, he got hurt in the corner in one game, and none of the players gave a crap, and they didn't go over and talk to the guy or push and shove or anything. And that's part of the reason why those teams were not, despite the talent, they just didn't have any heart or anything really. And seeing, somebody step up of, hey, you hurt my guy, I'm gonna fill your face, that's a good response. And, because it does act as a deterrent, so other people go, hey, I should not really go and hit this vulnerable guy because I'm going to get it.
Yeah, I don't want our player going out and doing that just because, but when you're responding to, like you said, a teammate getting hit maybe incorrectly or a cheap hit on a guy, it's nice that we do have that policeman who acts in a defensive manner, if that makes sense. I don't want Luch to just be this, thug in the league. But yeah, you need your policeman, and I think that already in the first two games, Luch has shown he can do that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important for this team to have more heart to them. And
Hamonic tried to do that last year and broke his jaw.
Yeah. We need to have everybody basically committing to the concept of winning. And we've even seen that even in other ways, like where Monahan and Goudreau have been playing a lot more responsible defensively. And it's a little things like that, but it's everybody buying into the goal of the team winning and being successful.
Well, this is now the 10th season opener in a row that the Flames have dropped. They haven't 1-1 since 2009 was the last time that they was the last season opener win. Interestingly, against Vancouver. You and I have talked a bit last week about how this team often gets off to a slow start, and that's been kind of their MO for years. But I don't know if 10 in a row is a record or not, but it just seems quite disappointing that we haven't won a season opener since 2009.
Yeah, at least we're not Minnesota Twins fans, and this isn't a Twins podcast, because 15 straight postseason losses, like, that's not a major league record you want to have right now.
No.
But the season opener thing, that I think is just an aberration, like us with the Honda Center, where it's like, yeah, okay.
we beat the demons of the Honda Center. Now we'll have to win a home opener, or a season opener next year, I should say.
Yeah. Well, and if you're going to lose a game, Colorado, I'm expecting to be either first or second in the Central Division this year. So, you know, if you're going to lose one, at least it's to a good team. Yeah, and you didn't really, you know, if you're being technical with that one goal that should have been waved off, you didn't really technically lose. It was a tie. So,
but by that logic, we should be 2004 Stanley Cup champions too, right?
Well, aren't we?
Doesn't say so on the Stanley Cup.
Well, we'll have to get a chisel in there.
We're going to sneak you into the Hall of Fame. I'll have to do this podcast with you during visiting hours. It's Dan and Matt. All right, we're sending you Toronto, Matt. Well, the next game and the only other game this week, the Flames came home, and Saturday night they started the season in front of their fans here at the Dome with the big home opener, and the Vancouver Canucks were in town. The Flames ended up winning this one by a 3-0 score, a nice early season shutout for Big Save Dave, as they call him. Let's start right from the beginning here, even with the pregame festivities, if you will, for the home opener. Matt, you've been to a lot of these home openers in the past, and you know the Flames usually put on a pretty good show in the home opener.
Yeah, generally. There's some years that it's just okay, but generally they tend to go above and beyond, and it's usually a great show.
I thought this year they opened up, and if you've seen it, if not, the video's on the Flames website. We posted some pictures on our Instagram as well. They had some drummers at center ice, which is kind of neat. They were playing a video, and the drummers were keeping the cadence going. But usually this team's got, you know, some LED screens when the players come out and fire on the ice and all this. And I was thinking, wow, it's the 40th season. The Flames are really promoting what a milestone season this is. The show is going to be awesome. And I was kind of let down by it. Pretty much each guy skated on the ice with some red lights behind them and just skated through a line of drummers. There was no fire on the ice. There was no LED screen. I think last year they projected their number on the ice below them. I was just kind of disappointed based on how the Flames have promoted this season as being so monumental that they didn't do that. I even thought it would be cool if they had a Flames alumni come out with each guy who wore that number in the past. Like some way to promote what a big season this is.
Yeah, well, you see, they're being true to the retro theme with the retro budget of, yeah, here's the guys, go, let's drop the puck already.
The other odd thing, and maybe this is just me nitpicking, so you've been to these, they usually give out scarves for fans at the home opener.
Yeah, I actually have a pile of them right behind me, actually.
Probably the same ones this year, but the retro logo is the 40th logo is the retro colors. They wore their third jerseys, and I'm looking down from the press box, and there's all these black C's on scarves in the stands. And I thought, you know what? At least give out a retro-colored scarf. Like, you know, put the 40th logo on it.
The thing is that in past, they've actually done the retro-colored scarves, because one of the ones I have is actually a retro-themed one. And, you know, it would have been very easy to do that. And
like, it's just weird looking down from the press box, seeing the retro-colored 40th logo at center ice, and then all these black sea scarves in the stands. And I just thought, like, somebody didn't pay attention to those small details.
Yeah, but, you know, that's where the Flames get that, like, the jersey that they had with the script, one that looked like it was five different concepts rolled into one. And it's lack of attention to detail that, you know, or the banners being the wrong colors and, like, all that kind of stuff. So
the banners have been fixed.
Yeah. It took a lot of complaining, though.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just, I don't know, I was kind of disappointed by the whole presentation and what they did for the 40th season. I mean, I know that they're probably maybe spending their money or saving their money trying to buy these bobbleheads and stuff they're giving out, but I was just expecting a better show considering how important they're making this season out to be. It doesn't go along with their story.
Yeah, well, they got to save some money for the new arena and all that, so
I can just see them.
Yeah, every penny counts.
We spent the extra $1 million on Kachuk. Take the screens back. Take the screens back.
We can't afford it.
That's right. So, I mean, you know, one of my friends was one of the drummers. I'm not saying the drummers weren't a good touch. I liked it, especially with all the drumming Harvey's doing these days, but it just felt like it needed something more.
Yeah.
Once the Flames were on the ice, though, the Flames got announced. Interesting notes on kind of who got the most cheers. It was the guys you would expect, the, you know, Giordano, Monahan, Goudreau. But I was surprised how much noise the Flames made for Lucic, considering how polarizing his acquisition this summer was. Though I couldn't tell if the fans were chanting Luch or booing. It was kind of hard to tell, but it sounded like a Luch to me, and I was surprised how much noise we made for him.
Oh, it, you want to encourage the guy and
for sure. I just
properly
based on how, you know, how polarizing it was, though, I was surprised to hear that.
True.
So the Flames got into this game, got a goal in the first period from Elias Lindholm, a goal in the second from Sean Monahan, and a goal in the third period from Johnny Goudreau. That first line getting all the goals here. I actually thought the Flames came out and played a pretty sloppy first period. They weren't.
Yeah, I agree.
They weren't looking like a team that, you know, was number one in the West last year. They weren't looking a team that's probably looking to be number one in the West again. They did what we saw so many times last year, and then I think they played to what their opponents were doing. As you said earlier, these guys have to be confident enough to say, this is our game, we're going to play this way to this level every night. And I think they came out and they responded to what the Canucks were throwing down, and it got them off their game a bit.
Yeah, and it, I think the shots at one point were 7-1 or something like that, and it just, they didn't seem to have any cohesion, and they took a couple of penalties, if I recall correctly, and it just, everything kind of seemed disjointed, and it's frustrating to see this team do that, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're also playing Vancouver, which, like, they only had one really good scoring chance in the entire game, and that was that Tyler Myers point-blank shot, and which that was a heck of a save by Riddick, but like, the rest, like, this team, like, they just have to...
But that's why they should have looked better than they did, like, considering, yeah, like you said, they're playing Vancouver. This should have been a night that the team looked strong and looked ready to go, and they weren't. And that was my issue, is they were playing down to Vancouver, and they were struggling because of it.
Well, part of the problem that this team has is that two of the players have been borderline terrible to start the season and not really of NHL caliber, and that is Michael Frolik and Mark Jankowski. And it's hard when you have two guys that you're kind of relying on to be somewhat decent contributors.
Yeah, but those are two of 18 forwards, or two of 12 forwards, I guess, and I thought that the rest of them didn't look great last night either. That first line looked like they were ready to play for the most part, but it wasn't just those two that were not ready.
Yeah, and I think that chemistry is a bit of an issue with the second and third line, and like I don't think that Bennett is a good fit on that third line. I actually would like to see him bumped up to the second line for a while, because there's been a lot of plays that he's made where the other guys just can't accept them, and I think that giving Frolik less time on the ice would be actually better as well. And I think that, like, once the chemistry thing gets figured out, that things will start clicking a lot better.
Yeah, and talking about Peters after the game last night, he said that, you know, he knows the chemistry maybe isn't there and he wants to get it going. He really likes the idea of Lucic and Ryan together. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see at some point maybe trying Sam in other situations, even if not on 5-on-5, giving him some more PK time or PP time. But I think right now they don't want to mess with that 3M line.
Yeah.
I think the first injury, you'll see some shuffling.
Yeah. And I think if you see Frolik struggle in the next game, I think that, like, part of the way through, that might get switched and see how Bennett does up there. Just because he's looking like the person that's out of sequence with the other two guys. And I do like the Lucic and Ryan pairing. It's just the third part on that isn't quite clicking correctly.
Well, and even on the Bennett side, it's interesting you mention that. I'm just looking at the time on ice stats here from last night. Bennett actually played 10 minutes and 3 seconds total. Tobias Reeder played more than him. The only guy who played less was Mangiapane. So, as far as forwards go. So they're not even, you know, giving him that time to get going right now. And a part of that was the Flames had a lot of special teams out there, so he wasn't getting going. He only played 3 seconds in the first half of the third period. But, yeah, I think a lot of that too, Matt, is just that these two games, the Flames have taken a lot of penalties, and we haven't seen the guys out there as much as we should be.
Yeah, and once things settle down, things will get sorted out. It's just that you want, like, everybody to be contributing at a higher level, and, like, Jankowski and Frolik have been notably bad in each game, so we'll see if that trend continues moving forward. And, like, if at the end of the month they're still struggling, then perhaps you remove them from the lineup entirely.
I think it's gonna be tough to remove Frolik just because I don't know that we have a second line right winger ready to go.
Well, I think you just throw Bennett up there. And
yeah, I think he's got to show a little bit more to me to be in that position full time.
Yeah.
I think Janko is an easy deletion because everyone's looking for a cheap young centerman, and you could get a pick for him, but I'm not sure there's time to delete Frolik yet. I don't disagree with you, but I think before I would say trade him or delete him, I'd move him to the third line and see how he does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, Frolik, that's been part of the problem. Like, and we saw that last year where he's not a second line forward, and he's never been a second line forward. He's always been a third, an elite third line guy. And he's not, it's just that he has chemistry with Tkachuk and Backlund, but his level of play just isn't up to theirs. And I think the Flames need to, if he continues to struggle, they need to find somebody who can play more at their level.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you about him not being a second line forward. I think he's one of those guys, though, that can jump into a second line in a pinch, which you need.
Yeah, for sure.
An injury or something like that. But, yeah, I think the team has given him more responsibility than he should get right now, being that full-time second-line right winger. And I think it's just a matter of, do we have somebody ready? And I'm not sure Bennett's quite there yet. I also, as much as I don't think he should be there, I don't know if I want to mess with that chemistry. He's doing better than he should be because of that line.
Yeah. We'll see. Like, with Tkachuk struggling just because he didn't really have a preseason, that it makes that line a little bit exposed for a bit when you only have basically Backlund playing even remotely like himself.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from. A couple more notes I had about this game. The Flames took 14 penalties to Vancouver's 10 in terms of penalty minutes, sorry. Calgary's still taking far too many penalties, and even Peters said that after the game in his media availability, that the Flames are taking way too many penalties. They have to tone that down because they're just not able to get the flow going when you're constantly on the PK. I summed this up to somebody I was talking to last night, that the Flames' best players were their best players, and that's why they won. I mean, all three goals came from the first line. I thought Gio looked good. I was really impressed by Anderson last night as well. Anderson was playing on the third pairing with Shillington, and he's really looking like a guy to me who deserves more than third pairing minutes. We saw that last year, and I think, you know, based on that game as well, I think it might make the Flames' decision easier if they decide to move on from Brody.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw a little bit of compliments to his defense partner, Shillington. I thought he had a very strong game against Vancouver as well.
Yeah, I thought he looked good, but I think that he still looks like a third-pairing guy.
Oh, I agree.
And it, I think he, that I, Anderson carried that pair a lot.
Yeah. Shillington, he reminds me a lot of when Brody first stepped into the league, where, like, you can see there's a lot of good things there. It's just he has to put together the not-so-good parts of his game, and it took Brody, like, a season and a half to really figure things out at the NHL level, but if Shillington can figure those things out, that would make him a very good depth defenseman for this team.
Yeah, there's a few times last night that I saw Shillington make some mistakes and Anderson had to jump over to his side to fix them or something like that. But I think, you know, he's a young player, Shillington. He needs some time to grow. And you're going to get that by playing in the NHL. And I think that Anderson, being a guy who's ready to take on more responsibility, is a good partner for Shillington. I definitely like the way that those guys were last night.
Yeah, and I think that for a third pairing, that those two guys are amongst some of the better ones for the third pairing in the entire NHL.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll be curious to see how Shillington does in an 82-game schedule. That's my only worry.
Yeah, there's always going to be ups and downs, and that's why I was drawing comparisons to TJ Brody when he first entered the league, because, like, there was often games where he'd make, a really dumb pass or, you know, just a boneheaded decision, period, and, like, it'd lead to a chance or a goal against, and he worked those out, though, and sometimes you need, like, on-the-job training, and I think that Shillington is probably too good at this point for the AHL, and I don't think that he'll learn too much more from that. And if he can learn at the NHL level to fix those parts of his game, then he'll be a force for this team.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point Shillington goes down for a little bit, even just to give him a week of top reps. But yeah, I think you're right. He's ready for the NHL, but we need to give him some time to mature and grow as a defenseman.
Yeah, and having a guy like Anderson, who frankly could play on the first pairing right now as his partner, it helps. It's just like Giordano when Hamilton was here. Like, he helped to gloss over a lot of the little problems that Hamilton had, and I think that Anderson will do much the same for Shillington.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think Shillington will also get a chance this season, at least for a handful of games, to play with Stone. And again, I think a veteran defenseman in Stone will help his development there. So whether he's playing with Raz or he's playing with Stone, I think he's going to have good partners for most of the year.
I agree.
So, I mean, looking at that game, we got a shutout from our goaltender. We got our top line scoring. Yeah, we had too many penalties, but I think this one, more than the Colorado game, gives the Flames a lot to build on. There's things they did well, things they didn't do well. The team has Sunday off, and they're back on the practice ice on Monday. But I think that this really gives them a lot they can build on. If they got to look at one of these two games, I think the Vancouver game is the one I want them to make some progress on. What about you?
Well, I'd actually prefer them to take a lot of looks at the Colorado game to view the little detail works that caused them hiccups throughout that game, and to, like, and then the Vancouver game where they were able to overcome that and just, you know, roll over Vancouver, really. And I think that there's a lot of lessons to be learned from each game, and I think that this team, moving forward, just needs to tone down the penalties, obviously, and that's a given, but just lots of attention to the little things, and, you know, when they're playing most teams, like, they're just going to simply out-talent them. Even if they're not having the best of night, they'll probably come away with 2 points if they're playing an average team, just because of the talent difference. But if they're wanting to go far in the playoffs, they need to have everybody on the same page where they're all paying attention to the details and all being a cohesive unit. And we haven't really seen that from this team yet.
No, we're 2 games in, but I think there's a lot to build on for that LA game. And I think the team's got to come out and play their game in LA and not play down to what they think LA might be or what LA opens the game as.
Yeah.
And I mean, thank really, you. That's their key to winning most of the time.
And thank you, Jonathan Quick, for giving James Neal 2 goals, so that way we're that much closer to a third-round pick.
There you go. Yeah, it's a weird stipulation on that one, but I know there was somebody on Twitter who was doing conditional pick watch, and he says he's going to update after every game. So there's a compelling Twitter to follow.
Yeah. Well,
from Neal the people who brought you boring Sean Monahan comes conditional draft pick watch. I don't know if they're the same person or not. It just sounds fun.
Yeah. Well, Neal has to score 20 and have 10 more than Lucic, and we get a third-round pick. So, which, you know, knowing the Oilers, that'll be a top 5 third-round pick. So, go Neal. You know, I'll cheer for you. You know, I'm not going to cheer for Edmonton, but, you know, get 20.
The only other thing I wanted to point out about this game is, you know, my thoughts on too many men on the ice penalties. I think they're one of the most undisciplined penalties you can take, and Vancouver took 2 here. So a team that struggled to count to 5 twice in that second period, it's like, you know, we took 3 of them in a row in 3 games, as you know. It's just, I don't know, I think it's sloppy, and I think it's another reason why Calgary is able to capitalize here. There's sloppy play on both sides. I don't think Calgary played well. I don't think Vancouver played well, but I would say Calgary was the less bad team in this one.
Yeah. And one thing that I noticed, and I've noticed with each game that David Rittich has appeared in, he has a bit of a swagger going on.
He does.
And you don't usually see that unless the goalie's good. And I mean, like, good. And, you know, like, when I was growing up, like, I was always watching guys like Belfour, Hasek, Waugh, Brodeur, Cujo, and then Kipper, of course, here. And, you know, like, I've always loved goaltenders. And, like, each of those guys, when they're really on, like, they have that confidence of, like, you just can't beat me. You know, try as hard as you want, you're not getting that puck by me. And Rittich, I'm starting, for the first time since watching him, when we first saw him at the development camp, we're starting to see that, a little bit of that swagger, and it'll be interesting to see if that's just a momentary thing, or if that will carry on, and if, you know, according, you know, good numbers follow with that. But it'll be interesting to see, because he just seems to have that extra air of confidence that it's rare to see.
Yeah, it's not a new thing, though. Remember last year he did that salt thing? Everyone made the meme of him sprinkling wins. And then, what was it? There was the overtime game. Was it last year, the year before, when Johnny was going up on the breakaway? And he just started celebrating before the goal was even scored? Like, he's been this way for a while.
Oh, I know. It's not about, like, him, like, when he's not... It's, like, how he's making the saves. And... like, there's just a difference in, like, his mannerisms on the ice. And, like, it's just a lot more focused in the movements and composed overall. And it just, it's slightly different from last year, where, like, there was a little bit of tentativeness in his movements. And, like, he was still very good, but, like, you could kind of tell that he was a rookie goaltender last year. And, like, now there just seems to be an air of, I'm awesome, and let's go. And, like, that save against Tyler Myers, that was, like, emblematic of what I'm talking about, where he's out, well out past the crease, and he's just like, eh, who cares? You know, that you call that a shot, big deal.
Yeah, I was worried on that one, though.
Oh, so was I, but that was a heck of a save. But it was that confidence of, oh... that's all you've got. And, you know, there's just something about it where it's my goalie Spidey sense is tingling.
The thing I'll tell you from a bit of a different perspective, I've noticed, and maybe it's just him getting more comfortable with English, but Dave is getting more and more comfortable in the media scrums as well. I mean, last year he wasn't as much, and last night he was smiling and joking and answering a lot more questions. So you can tell he's just feeling better about, I think, like you said, himself as a goaltender, himself as a starter. He's getting more accustomed to being a Calgary Flame.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see, and hopefully that continues. And especially if he plays that way, then, like, that was the main thing that I was concerned about this team, frankly, was the fact that, like, if you look at other elite teams, they all have a good goaltender. And, you know, like, Mike Smith was all right in the playoffs last year, but he was, you know, he's still Mike Smith. And, you know, I think if the Flames are going to win the Cup, they need to have a goalie that can play at a better than average or significantly better than average level. And if Rittich continues to play from what I've seen thus far in the preseason and the first two games, and he extrapolates that over the course of the whole season, then the Flames won't have anything to worry about in that department.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. We had a fan question sent in this week from Steve Doherty on Twitter, at Lots2Say21, and he asked us about Dave Rittich, and he says, can Rittich play a 9.20 save percentage for 65 games? So he's I guess, wondering, is Rittich the next elite goaltender in the league, is how I would interpret that. Matt, what are your thoughts? Do you think he can run that kind of pace for 65 games?
If you would have asked me that a month and a bit ago before the preseason, I would have said that would be extremely optimistic and, like, you know, best case scenario, but yeah, not really likely. Like, with my expectations of Rittich heading into this season would be that he would be a middle-of-the-pack starter at best, and, like, as long as he wasn't bad, or, you know, like, what he was towards the end of last season, then, hey, great. And I was kind of expecting Talbot to be in that, you know, like, 20-ish overall in terms of, like, goals against and save percentage, and, like, you have to figure that the Flames team last year had 107 points with, like, perhaps the single worst or second worst goalie in the entire league behind them. Now, with how I've seen Rittich, I could see it. You know, I don't think that he'll play 65 games. I don't think any goaltender really plays that much anymore, but I could see that over the course of a season, which, you know, that's unusual for me to say, because, like, I was not expecting that from him this year, and I frankly it's like watching two different goaltenders from what I saw last year to what I'm seeing this year. Like, this is not the same David Rittich.
Well, as I said to you in one of our preseason episodes, I think the big difference is, in the past, Rittich was trying to become an NHL regular. This year, the team has told him, you're our 1A guy, and my big question is he going to be able to step up and take that role and, you know, show us that he can be an elite goaltender? If he does, it's a heck of a story, a guy no one had heard of, come over to North America and take that role. To answer Steve's question, I don't think he's going to play 65 starts this season. I think that's a lot of starts, especially when you're looking to go deep in the playoffs and need him to be ready for that. But I think a 920... Let's say a 920 for him all season, and however many he starts. I don't know if he'll do that this year, but I think there's going to be some stumbles for Rittich as he's still a young goalie trying to find his way, and I think I just think he's going to struggle at some point. But I think as he gets to be a better goaltender in 2-3 years, we could definitely see a season where he's got 920 or better save percentage across the league. I just don't think this is the year.
Yeah. And I would not even be shocked if this year, if he continues to play well, that he's actually one of the all-stars from our division.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll be a Pacific Division all-star. But I think 920 save percentage and really his, let's call it his first full NHL season, if you look at how many he's played, and his first year as a starter, I think that's optimistic.
Yeah. Well, it could happen, but, like, he'd have to be basically awesome all year. Yeah. And, you know, if he plays like he did in the first two games all season, it could happen.
But other thing to that, too, is that he's got to be on the same page as a defenseman almost every game for that to happen. And knowing this team, we're going to have some games where there's massive defensive lapses. I mean, we saw that in Colorado. Like, for a goalie to get those kind of numbers all year, the defense has got to be stellar as well. And I think that the biggest breakdown is going to be, as much as I think they're good, history will tell us that defensive lapses are going to kill his average this year.
Could very well be.
I'm just looking at his last season. I mean, we have to remember, too, this guy has 69 NHL games to his name so far. So really, you know, the sample of work, as much as we like him as Flames fans, the sample of work is not there yet to be able to judge him long term. But looking at last year...
Well, it's basically what Kipper had when he got here.
Yeah.
Roughly about the same. Like, very unproven goaltender at the NHL level. And
I think the difference there, though, is, you know, Kipper had been through the Sharks organization. And,
yeah, true.
You know, Riddick really came from nowhere. Came out of, you know, playing in the Czech League, and really no one knew anything about him. So it's been a bit of a different journey to get here. If I take a look at Kipper's stats, you know, he played in the AHL for a couple of years. He played World Cup for Finland. You know, like, he was playing the Swedish League, which is much better than the Czech League. I just think that he had much more of a pro trajectory.
Yeah.
So last year...
And always we have to praise Daniel Preble for standing out enough to draw the Flames scouts to find Riddick.
There you go. We owe Preble for something.
Yep.
Last year, Riddick played 45 games. He had a 9.11 save percentage, and that was enough to really take the team on their back and carry them into the playoffs. So I don't think 9.20 is out of the realm of possibility. He played 21 games the year before and had a 9.04. I bet he ends up with about a 9.15 this year.
And you also have to remember that, like, after his injury, he played a lot worse than he did. So that 9.11 was more around the 9.15 prior to the injury. But, you know, it's one of
those really
things
things to unpack here. There's the save percentage and the number of starts. And I think that Talbot's going to get a significant number of starts this year. I also think that the team is going to be more comfortable, if they need to, taking Riddick out of the net if he starts getting shelled. And, you know, that's going to help as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I think 920 is doable maybe this year, if not next year, the year after. You know, depending on how long he can stay as a starter. But I think in his first real year as the 1A guy. To be honest, he came into last year trying... His job was to back up Smitty, and he won the starting role because Smitty was so bad. This is his first year where he's coming in as the 1A guy, and I think we have to remember that when we're looking at stats and expectations as well.
Just keep up the good work.
Yeah, but 65... If he...
I don't really think... I think that maybe two or three goalies in the entire NHL will play 65 games. Like, there's not really too many that play that kind of workload anymore.
No, and if he's playing 65, it makes me wonder what has happened to Talbot.
And Zagadulin, and, you know, Gillies and Parsons.
You know, I really think that part of the Flames' success this year, if they're going to have playoff success, is using both goalies and making sure they're both ready to go for the postseason. And if we're, you know, so disillusioned by Talbot that we're starting Gillies 65 of our 82 games, I think that that's another dangerous time for the Flames, because we haven't had a lot of goalie success in the last few years. And if we're only starting Talbot or somebody else in 17 games, we're in a bad place going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you don't want to tire Riddick out either. He's just not simply used to that kind of workload either. Like, you know, I think 55 is pretty much his cap.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, where we think he'll get the start numbers. I think 55 would be a good number.
Yeah.
I think even if you can get him down to 50 and see enough success with Talbot, that's a good thing too. You were talking about Zagadulin, Matt. The Stockton Heat had a back-to-back series in Colorado this week, and Zagadulin played both games, and Stockton swept both games. Got the win, starting off on a good, I guess, foot there, and Zag was in net for both games. From what I'm hearing, he looked really good this weekend.
Yeah, and he reminds me a lot of what Riddick was when he first started getting starts in the AHL, where just his overall composure in the net. Like, that's one of the things that stood out with Zagadulin, was that he was very composed and not fishing around and flopping around in his crease. Like, we saw some more fluidity from guys like Gillies and Parsons and Schneider, and Zagadulin's just very composed, knows how to make the saves, is in the right spots, and does it. And we saw that with Riddick back when he was coming up, that he was very composed, and we were both kind of like surprised that, oh, hey, this Riddick guy, he's doing rather good. That's weird. And, you know, because he had no fanfare at the time, and he pushed his way into the NHL. And if Zagadulin continues to play like this, I think that he eventually will make the NHL as well.
I can see 2-3 years down the road a Riddick-Zagadulin pair up here.
Yeah, same here. Even as soon as next year, him, Zagadulin getting some starts in the NHL, I would be reticent to have him full-time. But if the Flames need to save a few bucks on the backup, you could go that route.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you find a goaltender you like, you want to take the slow road with them, especially if you're looking for them to be a 1A guy. If it's just a career backup, it's different. But if you're looking for a guy who could be a 1A, even a 1B in today's NHL, I would rather... And I'm, you know that I've always been a fan of keeping guys in the AHL, but I think goalies especially, you can over-ripen in the AHL a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's, like I've said this many times on our draft shows, that the Flames just need to keep adding goaltenders and keep adding goaltenders until you find a Kipper-level guy. And, you know, Zagadulin, if he's playing well, keep him doing what he's doing until a spot opens up, and then if he earns it, then throw him in there. And, you know, like, best case scenario is you have Riddick and Zagadulin battling it out, much like Gibson and Anderson were in Anaheim, which, oh, gee, we have two awesome young goaltenders. Darn, what
keep
are we
one,
going to
you'll
do?
You'll get great value for the other one.
Exactly.
So this was the first time since 2016-2017 that Stockton starts with a 2-0 record, and the first time ever that the Heat have won their first two road games of a campaign. So nice to see them off to a good start. They didn't have a great year last year. Interesting that the scoring was opened in both games by Matthew Phillips. The first game of the season had Brian Ferosi get a goal. He's wearing the C down there this year, as well as Alexander Yellison. And in the second game, and then also Justin Kirkland, the guy we talked about last week, who got his one Flames goal, and now he's got his Stockton goal. And then the second game, Phillips and Leslie and Ferosi, again, the scorers for the Flames, as well as Buddy Robinson. So the veteran guys down there, it sounds like, contributing in the way that they're being expected to.
I'm going to have a bold prediction. By February, Matthew Phillips is on the Flames full-time.
Who do you think he replaces?
I think he'll push his way onto the second line or third line, like into like one of the better spots where he's actually getting scoring opportunities.
See, I'm just thinking if they want to fill those, I think there'd be guys like Dubé, or you even mentioned, Bennett, who I think the team would want to move that high up the lineup before Phillips.
Well, I think part of that is insulating Phillips as well, because, he is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So... But I think that he's going to end up, with his offensive abilities, I think he's going to end up forcing his way into the NHL sooner than later.
Yeah, I just don't know if this year is the year he becomes a full-time NHLer. I mean, we saw that from Mangiapane late last year. I think Phillips will get at least one call-up, but I think the best thing we can do for him this year, honestly, is to give him a year in the AHL, year in the AHL, and let him be a full-timer down there and try to push for a full-time spot in the postseason.
Oh, I agree. I think that he's just going to be that good where he's going to force Treliving's hand versus, just being good in the AHL.
Sometimes the best thing for your development is to be the big fish in a small pond, be the best guy on the AHL team and put up those offensive numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if at deadline day they say, we have this guy, it gives us more flexibility in deals we make, but I think it's a little optimistic maybe unreasonably so to say that he's going to come up from the AHL and jump right into our second line.
Yeah. Oh, I have a lot of expectations for Matthew Phillips. I see a lot of Jake Guentzel in his game, and I view them as kind of comparable prospects, like when Guentzel was that age and all that. And there's a lot of his game I really like, and I'm a full believer that he will actually be a good NHLer once he gets here.
I think he'll be good. I just don't want to rush him.
True.
Right, I'd rather he spend a couple years in the A, show us he's really good, start on the third or fourth line and work his way up, as opposed to being put there and have some struggles. Or we've even seen guys put above their head and it doesn't work out for them. So I think if we really think that he's valuable, we have a deep enough Flames roster, and I'd say even, you know, prospect forward roster, that you can take some time with him.
Yeah.
I think he might be in the NHL. And I just don't think he needs to go right onto the second line.
Yeah. I think that what you'd more likely see is him being on the fourth line with the odd shift on an upper line, like if you need a goal or something like that, because of his offensive skill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that's what the Penguins did back when Guentzel came up, was that he was on the fourth line, and when times were required, he jumped up.
Yeah, I just think there's guys like you mentioned earlier, Bennett, who they'd want to give some of those higher-end opportunities to first before they just pull a guy like Mangiapane up and put them in those roles.
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of that order of succession and the whole depth chart idea, but you could be right. I just think that there's other guys, even a guy like Dubé, that they'd want to try out there first.
Yeah. I could see that. It's just, I have full confidence in Bubba.
Yeah, I think he could be a good NHLer. I just think that, you know, we're not Edmonton where we need to just rotate in the best guys we have. And sometimes the best thing about being a high-end franchise is it buys you time and it lets you wait on guys.
I could come up with about a few dozen Edmonton Oilers jokes here, so I'll just keep on going.
All right. Well, let's keep on going. Let's look at the week that was, and we play our prediction game every week, as long-term fans know. Last week, you and I predicted how the Flames would do. You thought that we'd have a sweep of both games. I said, you know what? I think the Flames are going to struggle a bit in Colorado with it being Colorado's home opener, but they'll win in Vancouver. So I'm already up 1-0 over Matt after the first week of the season. Matt, I think this is not going to be your season again.
Yeah, well, it is what it is.
You win some, you lose some. If you're the Oilers, you lose more than you win. But, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, well, if you're Edmonton, you just lose, period.
Nobody's ever lost 82 games.
True. The Oilers just find new and inventive ways to embarrass themselves, so.
I was talking to a guy who actually, I guess, did some data modeling, and he was using, I want to say the Finnish League, but I have to double check, who has a relegation system, and he said if we applied those numbers to the NHL, the Oilers would be in the ECHL by now.
Yeah.
The question is, could they win the ECHL trophy?
If you took McDavid out of it, I don't know. I don't think so. And that's kind of bad to say, but, you know, like, they only have four NHLers on the forward group. Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl, McDavid, and Neal. And, you know, calling Neal an NHLer is a little bit, you know, positive towards him.
Now I've wound you up, I'm going to go have dinner and let you do your Oilers rant.
Yeah. And then they lose Larson for like half the season, and yeah.
I'm only angry about that because I have Larson in my hockey pool.
Yeah, well, that shows you for taking an Oiler in your hockey pool.
You know what, it was the last round, and I figured let's try this out and see how it works. If he's bad, yeah, there's free agents available.
You killed him.
See, you said he's dead. You told me earlier Zarnik's dead. What is it with you and killing NHLers today? This is like Clue.
Yeah.
Now we got to
figure. Butler did it.
Now we got to figure out. It was the trainer in the dressing room with a lead pipe. Well, Matt, let's look ahead to this next week. We have four games coming up. A bit of a tougher week for the Flames. They played two last week and four this week. One of them at home. And then the Flames go on really their first road trip for the year They're at home on Tuesday playing the LA Kings, a 7 p.m. start time. Then on Thursday, they're in Dallas, a 6:30 p.m. start time. So note that, Flames fans, that you'll need to be in front of your TV a bit early. Saturday night, we're in Las Vegas playing the Vegas Golden Knights at 8 p.m. And then Sunday, a back-to-back against San Jose, another 8 p.m. start there. So three games on the road, four games total. Matt, what do you think? How do we do this week?
Well, this is going to be a very good marker for this team. Because Dallas, I'm expecting to be one of the better teams in their division. Especially with them getting Joe Pavelski, that's a huge addition for that team. Vegas is supposed to be good. Well, they are good. And San Jose's bad, but they're not... Like, they're playing bad, but they're not as bad as they've been
playing.
Their
roster is a good roster.
Yeah. Frankly, if they go 2-2, that would be fine, but they really need to go 3-1, so that's what I'll go with.
So which three?
They'll beat the I'll go with all the Pacific teams. They beat them.
So they beat Vegas, they beat LA, and they beat San Jose?
Yep.
And they lose to Dallas.
Yep.
I'm going to go completely the opposite. I think they're going to win against LA, and I think they're going to have their first struggles of the year losing to Dallas, Vegas, and San Jose. Just from what we've seen play-wise so far, I'm not convinced this team can beat three good teams in the league. Like you said, Dallas, I think, is going to be really good this year. Vegas is going to be a really good team, and I think even San Jose will have their way with Calgary. Not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, we hate to see that, but I think early on it gives you a lot of – you need that early season jolt sometimes, and I'm hoping this road trip, if they don't do well, maybe that's their wake-up call.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that they avoid that kind of embarrassment right now. You know, like I'd rather, like, especially with the Vegas and San Jose games, like those to me are both must wins. And I know it's early to say that.
I agree with
you.
I think they're must wins, but I also think that's why if they lose, it might be a good thing to have that loss come early, because I think that might be the system shock you need.
Yeah. Well, if they lose one of them, I'd probably prefer San Jose, just because of the fact that that'll stick in their craw a little longer. Like, if you lose in Vegas and then you beat the Sharks, you kind of erase the shock of that.
Back-to-back, we probably see Talbot in one. You think we see Talbot San Jose?
Yeah, definitely. That'll be his season debut, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And then the following week after that, we have four games again, but two of them at home. So I agree with you.
Who are we playing for the fans?
Next week?
Yeah.
Philly, Detroit, LA again, and Anaheim.
Yeah, so 4 week teams. So, like, it's not... Like, if they can get through this week at least at 500, that's a lot better than anything, really. And they'll be fine with that, especially because, like, those four games, they really should pretty much sweep the week.
I think the Flames can beat LA, and I think they can beat San Jose if they play their game. But we seem to struggle against the Sharks. Like, they seem to just not play well often when they're playing against San Jose. And I think it's, like you said, though, it's going to be a good week for a measuring stick.
Yeah, exactly. And this will be a good indicator of what this team's made of, because they have a handful of really dynamite teams that they got to go play against. And, you know, they have to be on their game in order to get 2 points. And as we saw last year, 2 points are very important early, just as they are in April.
Yeah,
so,
2 points are getting harder to come by in this league.
Exactly. And especially in a division like ours, where there's only three really good teams, that, you know, we need to be fighting with those two guys all the time, Vegas and San Jose, to make sure that we stay ahead of them.
If fans can only watch one game this week, which one do you suggest they watch?
Vegas.
I agree.
Vegas.
Yeah. Saturday night, Vegas. Vegas is supposed to be a pretty powerhouse team this year. I think that's really going to be the game of the week for Flames fans. Might not be the one you want to see, but I think it's the one that is going to give us the best idea of who this team is.
Yeah, because frankly,
like,
they
might not
want to
see it, because again, I think the Flames might lose that one. But
yeah, if you're going talent on talent, I think the Flames are better than LA, Dallas, and San Jose. And, like, if it comes down to just a talent match, we'd win those ones. Vegas, it's more of a coin toss. And that's what, you know, Vegas and Colorado, I think, are going to be the Flames' main competition for the conference this year. So yeah.
Talent-wise, I think you're right. I don't think, though, that Dallas's playing style is going to be easy for the Flames to counter.
No.
Even though there's...
Well, Jamie Benn just has his way with... And Sagan have their way with us every year.
They're a lot faster than us, though, I think, in general. And I think the Flames might... It might be hard for the Flames to neutralize Dallas.
Yeah. So, I like their young defenseman, Heiskanen. I think he's really good. I'm hoping that they're able to contain him a bit.
Well, we'll find out. We got four games to watch for. I talk to you next, Matt, and I guess enjoy these games. Hopefully the Flames come out more on your side than my side this week, and they get at least two wins, but it's going to be a telling week either way.
Yep. Oh, I'm hoping for at least that we split the difference, and as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.